Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Friday, the 20th of July. On Wednesday of this week, President Bush said he was creating a panel of cabinet officials to look for ways to minimize the dangers from food and other products shipped into the United States. It's the Interagency Working Group on Import Safety. Some Democrats are saying establishing a product safety panel is like stamping out a single leaf in a forest fire. There is legislation that would give the FDA stronger powers to regulate food imports and also more money to inspect them. This is pretty amazing. The FDA, responsible for all food imports except meat and poultry, has only 625 inspectors to monitor the entire food supply, whether the food is grown here in the United States or shipped from overseas. Do we need an overhaul of this and many, many more inspectors? And what do we do about imports from places like China that have so much been making the news lately? We have the perfect guest for this hour. Professor Julie Caswell is our guest this hour, and she is professor and chairperson of the Department of Resource Economics at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. Her work focuses on understanding the operation of domestic and international food systems, analyzing how well they work, evaluating how government policy affects their operation and performance, and her particular interest is the economics of food quality, especially the quality attributes of safety and nutrition. How are markets for food safety and nutrition developing given the increased consumer demand for safer and more nutritious products, manufacturers and retailers' efforts to meet this demand, and increased regulatory activity by national governments to assure food quality? We'll be welcoming phone calls for Professor Caswell. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. 272050. Professor Julie Caswell, hello. Thank you so much for being with us.
Good morning.
What do you think about this agency? Is this a good idea?
The Interagency Task Force?
Yes.
Yes. I think it's a good idea to focus attention on the issue and focus some resources. It's supposed to report back in about 60 days, and so from that point of view, I think it's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Those who are saying it's not enough say that the FDA needs a lot more clout here. It needs more money. It needs more inspectors. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think that the FDA is underfunded for the types of responsibilities that it has on its plate. And I was quite interested that in appointing this interagency task force that President Bush said that they were to look at actions and appropriate steps that can be pursued within existing resources. And I don't know what that means, but it's clear that FDA's current resources are inadequate.
I can't believe we only have 625 inspectors to look at all of this. That's just a handful.
It is a handful for the size of the portion of the food supply that FDA is regulating, which is everything except meat and poultry, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I think that's important to kind of focus on is that the number of inspectors, there's no magic number. That number that's adequate depends on the control systems that we have in place. And 600 certainly sounds inadequate, but it's hard to pin down exactly what would be right without talking about the whole of the quality control system.
Is the particular concern right now China?
Certainly, and it's a particular concern because of the events that we've had around Chinese products, and it's also a particular concern because of the volume of food that is coming in from China, but as the Chinese government has been pointing out recently, I think if we took our spotlight and shined it in other areas and other countries that are exporting to the United States, we'd find problems there just as we have in our domestic system.
Mm-hmm. From all places in the world, really.
Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. The Japan is really banning or rejecting Chinese exports. I guess the Philippines are are taking products off the shelves as well. It seems as though the Chinese are really going to have to step up to the plate here, or their booming economy, and indeed it is booming, could take a hit.
Definitely. And they have taken several steps in recent days to change their policies and to enforce them, you know, more strongly. But across the board, for the Chinese economy to maintain its growth and to keep the markets it's already established, it has to be able to assure countries like the United States and Japan and all the importing countries that it's doing its job adequately.
I was interested in this comment from the World Health Organization saying that inadequate monitoring of food is contributing to a rise in Salmonella E. coli, Listeria poisoning around the world. Is this pointing to a need for some kind of international body to take on this issue?
I think the international bodies are in place, and they're the World Health Organization, the Food and Agriculture Organization, and a group called Codex Alimentarius, which is a joint effort of those two. And the World Trade Organization takes a look at these issues as well. So I don't think it's a matter of new international institutions as much as a lot of on-the-ground effort in companies and in governments to assure quality, and also an emphasis on the consumer's role, because consumers have to also be a part of the food safety system.
How so?
Well, we have to be able to evaluate products to begin with, but we also have to handle products safely within our own homes and make sure that we're not, for example, cross-contaminating between a hamburger product and a salad and other things within the home. So the final line of defense, if you're for food at home, is how we handle the product ourselves.
Mm-hmm. That doesn't help, though, if there's formaldehyde in your cookies.
No, it doesn't. And there's a lot of food safety aspects of products that we can't detect as consumers, and that's when the companies and the government have to be the ones that are controlling those types of issues.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that, and would this be a good thing, this will, I'm wondering how much of our food we import at this point in time, whether or not it's good for us to import from a lot of countries all over the world where, you know, it contributes to energy costs as well to have all these foods come from China when perhaps they could be coming from the United States. Will all of this create enough concern on the part of consumers that they will be wanting to buy foods that are grown as close to their house as possible, and would that be a good thing?
Well, I think there's a lot of growing interest in local foods and thinking about the carbon footprint of the foods that you eat and buying locally. And I think it's a good thing any time that consumers take a strong interest in their food and where it comes from and what its quality is. I guess my caution would be that in buying products, what we're always interested in is quality, a quality-price relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And also availability. The type of availability of fruits and vegetables, for example, that we see in our supermarkets today, we wouldn't have without a lot of imports that are coming from, you know, other growing seasons in other parts of the world. And also, it may involve higher prices to be buying locally. So it's, you know, it's not a clear, it's a good thing for me. It's it all depends.
Right. What steps do we need to take, Professor Caswell, right now to make our food supply safer, be it in the United States or be it imports? What has to happen?
Well, I think the major first step is to increase the amount of resources that are going into food safety control, because I think they're inadequate to the volume of product that's coming in. And the FDA, not the USDA as much, the USDA has the responsibility for meat and poultry, but the FDA has gone through several years of really inadequate funding, and so all of their systems at this point in time are you know, run down. Mm-hmm. They haven't been regenerated and rebuilt in the way that they need to be. And one of the major things that needs to be done is the kind of restructuring that takes into account new testing methodologies, that really responds to the movement in the volume of food and where it's coming from. And we have systems that are set up for the products that were coming in the past, and they haven't been updated on an ongoing basis the way they need to. So my first priority would be to really think through the domestic and imported food control system and think about where to put the resources to get the most quality assurance for the money that we're willing to pay for that quality assurance.
Mm-hmm. And what about the USDA? Tell me what their responsibility is, and are they doing their job better than the FDA? Do they have more money?
They certainly have a bigger budget for the amount of product that they're looking at. So USDA, and it's the Food Safety and Inspection Service of USDA, they have the responsibility for essentially meats and poultry. Mm-hmm. And so they're, within the United States, they do continuous inspection in slaughter plants. And then they internationally, they regulate differently than FDA. And internationally, what they do is they actually, it's essentially they inspect foreign plants, and then those plants are approved for export to the United States, as opposed to in the FDA system. Most of the control is a port of entry inspection as opposed to a plant inspection in a foreign country.
So is it stronger due to the lingering impact of Upton Sinclair?
most people think that's a significant variable.
I would think so. I remember that book real well, real well. We're going to welcome phone calls, and here is our phone number, 800-486-8655. Professor Julie Caswell is our guest, professor and chair, Department of Resource Economics at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, and we are talking about our food supply. We're talking about the concern that many of us have with food from China particularly. But how is all of this regulated? Why is it that the FDA, responsible for all food imports except meat and poultry, has so few inspectors, just doesn't have very much money? How do we regulate this whole worldwide food food area? What do we do about it to ensure that foods and cookies and everything is safe? What systems need to be in place here? In Beijing this week, Chinese food regulators, and we'll talk to Professor Caswell more about their regulation, announced that there will be meetings coming up starting the last day of this month with their American counterparts to take on this issue and the concern that America and other countries have with Chinese imports, but there are other concerns from other countries as well. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050. A couple lines are open right now. Sherome Owens, our intern, is answering calls this morning. He'll chat with you for a while and get you on the air, and we'll be with you momentarily. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to your phone calls now. Our lines are jammed, so keep trying if you're trying to get through. Professor Julie Caswell, Professor Chair of the Department of Resource Economics at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, is our guest, founding member of the Food Safety Research Consortium. And starting our calls now with Milan. Hi, Milan.
Hi. Good morning to you both. I live in Duluth, which is near Bayfield, well-known apple country.
Mm-hmm.
So I go to the supermarket, and in front of me I have a label, Tropicana apple juice. And it's made by Tropicana Manufacturing Company in Florida. They use the word manufacturing. But anyway, it contains concentrates that I'm reading from the label. From Germany, Austria, Italy, Hungary, Argentina, Chile, Turkey, Brazil, China, and the United States.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, good luck trying to have traceability in these.
Huh. Professor.
Yeah, they, you know, what they're doing with their with that kind of a label is that they are sourcing from all of those countries at different times, maybe during the year or from year to year, of their concentrate based on pricing and quality. And so in order to have one label and not have to be changing it, they're going to have on there all of the possible sources of that product. And you as a consumer, as you're pointing out, can't use that label to know exactly which country this product's coming from.
Does it make you nervous to drink that, Milan?
Oh, somewhat, yeah. Because right. I heard that Tommy Thompson, when he was Secretary of Health and Welfare, say that this is a recipe for terrorism, really.
Mm-hmm.
We have no way of tracing, you know, the origin.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's a great point because there's a lot of clear overlap between what we do to ensure food safety, you know, microbial safety and that kind of safety, and what we would do to prevent terrorist activity in the food supply. And traceability and good systems of control work for both purposes at the same time.
Hmm. Thanks, Milan, unless you had something else.
No, that's all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Let's go to Chris from Sun Prairie. Hi, Chris.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
All right, how are you?
Wonderful. Say, I just had a question for your professor. Earlier in the conversation, I think one of you were mentioning that the government is looking at new systems to incorporate to help kind of fight the bacterial and the viruses that the foods may be picking up. And a system that I actually just bought into, and I was wondering if your guest knows a little bit more about them, is it's made by EcoQuest, and our understanding is it's been certified by NASA and the Space Agency, and the government is actually starting to invest into these air purifying machines that use the correct level of ozone with ion technology to clean surfaces on an active basis versus being a passive. And I just wanted to know if she knew a little bit about those systems and if she had any insight on that.
Yeah, I don't know anything specifically about those systems, but in general there's a lot of exciting new approaches to doing quality assurance, and our testing abilities, especially for quick turnaround testing of product and of surfaces, as you're talking about, is improving rapidly. And so, in some ways, the challenge is to design inspection systems and control systems that can use all this volume of new information and new technology in really effective ways.
And are you saying those have not been implemented yet, or some of them have and some of them haven't?
Well, some are implemented, some are on their way to being implemented. There's approval processes that have to be gone through. And one of the challenges is for if you're doing an inspection, say a plan inspection, how do you use information from that testing to determine whether the plant is operating safely or not?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are the tolerances for saying having a positive? Is it a zero tolerance or is it some small tolerance? And how do you incorporate that information into to evaluating how safe the product is and how safe the plant is?
I see. Well, it sure would be nice if all the countries in the world, and most of them, many of them are involved in exporting, would use the same kind of wonderful technology, right? Don't we need a worldwide program here?
We need the best practices to be adopted as broadly as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to another call. Barbara is next from Milwaukee. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, Kathleen. You actually know me. I sit in that booth sometimes.
Oh, hi, Barbara.
I had to call in on this show because it's close to my heart. Your guest had mentioned just a while back, very briefly, the Codex Alimentarius. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering mm-hmm. if she knows a lot about that. It is my understanding that if that particular piece of paperwork is adopted, it would mean that we will be completely regulated as to how we are able to purchase supplementation as far as a bottle of vitamin C. I was also told that it would also severely cramp our organic food purchases. Does she know anything about that?
The way the Codex works is it's kind of like a mini UN, United Nations, and representatives from all the countries that want to participate meet. And what they do is Codex Alimentarius means food code, and so what they do is write standards for all kinds of things like infant formula and canned foods and all kinds of different food products. But when they pass a standard, the idea with it is that it's to be a standard that is to be adopted by individual countries. But individual countries have the choice to adopt a Codex standard or not, or to adopt it in a altered way or in a modified way.
Mm-hmm.
So Codex doesn't have any authority over what national governments are doing in the area of food safety.
Oh, okay, and that would also include, you know, your basic vitamin supplements, because that is considered food.
I don't know the answer to. I'm not sure if Codex covers dietary supplements.
It does.
Okay.
It does.
Well, if it does, then the same would apply. They can set standards, but the individual governments,
that have
participate a lot, want to adopt the standard because it's a good thing to have common standards, but there's no, they're not forced to
okay.
in any way.
Yeah, that's something that I would definitely. I'm keeping track of that. The other real quick question I have, you know, I have been listening and I've heard many times now that a lot of countries will not accept our food because it's GMO, genetically modified.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I have to say that, yeah, maybe some unsafe things are slipping through from other countries, but we are trying to push stuff of our food on people who don't consider our food to be safe.
Mm-hmm.
So can you address that?
Well, I think, all the other countries of the world have the same rights as the United States to decide what products are coming into their countries and to regulate them. We do have, through the World Trade Organization, all the countries that belong have signed on to the idea that if you regulate a food product, you do it based on scientific evidence. And so there's been a huge controversy around genetically modified organisms and the
mm-hmm.
science of the safety of those products.
Right, right. Well, I guess just wanted to see what you thought about those two things. So,
thank you, Barbara. Thanks for staying on top of the issue. We have all our lines are open now. They've been very crowded, so if you've been trying to get through and you were frustrated, you will not be frustrated now. 800-486-8655 is the number, 800-486-8655. Milwaukee area callers, 227-2050, 227-2050. Barbara brought up the point of the United States shipping things and other countries having problems. The Chinese were saying that they received some meat recently that they said was bad. Was that tit for tat here, or are other countries, including the United States, to blame for tainted food?
Well, we all have some incidents of unsafe food in the export trade and domestically as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably some tit for tat at this point. The Chinese are wanting to underline that it's not a one-way street and that the United States doesn't have the perfect food safety system, and relatively, the Chinese system is pretty safe. These are the points that they are making, and want to—that's perspective that they want to have out there.
Mm-hmm. When you talked earlier about inadequate funding for the FDA, are you looking at a doubling of funding for this agency, or more than that? What would be adequate?
You know, I don't know what that number would be. The current budget of the Food and Drug Administration is about $1.5 billion.
Mm-hmm.
But they're also regulating all of the drugs in the United States, which is a big chunk of the work that they do. And when you think about $1.5 billion for regulating a big chunk of the U.S. economy and a very important chunk of the economy. I don't know what adequate would be, but I would be very surprised if it wasn't two or three times more than
right.
what they're spending now.
We go next to Mac. Hi, Mac.
Good morning. I just have a question, then I'll listen off the air. I have the impression that irradiation of foodstuffs is a very safe and extremely effective way of at least removing bacterial organisms from food. And I wonder if your guest has any comment on that, and I'll hang up and listen.
Okay.
Well, irradiation is approved for a number of uses in the United States and is effective in controlling foodborne pathogens in those uses. Yes, it's a effective technology, and I think as with all technologies used to make products clean of, say, microbial contamination, that one needs to worry about not just the treatment making the product clean, but the packaging protecting the product as it moves through the supply chain and into the grocery store, into your house. And so there's very many what we call critical control points to make sure that food is safe, and irradiation can definitely play a role in as one of those means.
Thanks, Mac, for your call. We go next to Mike from Eau Claire. Hi, Mike.
Yes, good morning, Kathy. What I'm concerned about is the food that is distributed by the food pantries to the poor. I've had some experience with it, and the produce that they give out has not been the best. So I'm going to listen off the air.
Okay, thanks.
I don't know what the best hasn't been the best means. If it appears to be a little older and a little browner than usual, that's not necessarily and usually not an indicator of of a safety issue. It's a quality issue with the product. And my experience with food pantries and food banks is that they have quality control systems in place to assure that the food that they're distributing is safe.
Mm-hmm. We go next to Dorothy from Madison. Hello, Dorothy.
Yes, good morning.
Hi.
I would like to say, listen to Lou Dobbs. He'll tell you the truth about all this stuff that's going on. It's ridiculous. We already have a law on the books that should be enforced, but our president muzzles the head of all departments not to even do their work, and nobody is checking into this. I certainly would like to know where my meat is coming from. That should be on the label. That's not very hard to put a little label on. And I've been buying grapes in the wintertime that taste terrible. They don't taste like the grapes from California used to taste. I think it's ridiculous that we aren't checking up into these things. And part of it is our government's fault. There is not one department in our government that is working. If there is, I wish you would tell me what it is.
Professor Caswell.
Well, I think one thing that you can do as a consumer is vote with your dollars. You can choose which products you want to buy and from what countries. We do have country of origin labeling on seafood already, and it probably will be implemented for meat, fruits and vegetables in 2008. But I'm not personally a huge fan of country of origin labeling as a safety indicator, because product coming from countries around the world can be as safe as domestic products. So I don't see country of origin labeling as being a particularly effective safety indicator.
Mm-hmm. If we were to implement some of these safety procedures that we all want, so we feel comfortable about eating food, which is it's good to feel comfortable about the food you eat, what would it do to the cost of food? We're really used to food in this country being fairly inexpensive.
Well, I think that it's possible that stronger food safety controls would increase costs, but in the industries that I have studied, which are mostly seafood and then red meat industry, the additional cost of systems like hazard analysis and critical control points tends to be pennies on the pound. We're not talking about major cost differentials in most cases.
Mm-hmm. Let's, Dorothy, thanks for your call. Let's go to Ron from Madison next. Hi, Ron.
Thank you. The two main points I wanted to talk about were recent news. There is a shortage of veterinarians who inspect food animals. That is, people who are trained in veterinary science, medicine, to inspect the meat and poultry supply in the U.S. Large animal veterinarians are not as plentiful as they used to be. Of the people going through vet school, apparently more of them are going into cats and dogs as their specialty. That was the recent news. The old news was 30 months ago today, Bush started his second term. And at about that time, our former governor, Tommy Thompson, resigned from the cabinet of Bush. And in his farewell address, he stressed the dangers to our food supply. Now, the media played that up as mainly a threat from external or internal terrorist attack. But the fact is, the tainted food we've gotten from China and perhaps other places is mostly because of corporate greed and because of government corruption. China just executed the head of their food safety department or whatever it's called because of his taking huge kickbacks and bribes and stuff mm-hmm. from the industry. And occasionally some other foreign government or society has a good idea like that, that holding corrupt officials and corrupt corporate executives legally responsible for their dealings. I have some experience with produce at food pantries. Most recently, one of them had about 100 pounds of potatoes available, and I took about 3 pounds home with me. Generally, you don't have the freshest, finest quality stuff being donated to food pantries. Those probably came from a wholesaler or maybe the grocery store nearby so that they could be used by somebody before they got too old. The other end, I also donate some produce from my garden plot, organic garden plot in town, when I have more than I can eat or, the neighbors are likely to help use. I don't think Lou Dobbs is a great source for truth. And I would say that among federal government departments, the Department of Agriculture has done a wonderful job at distributing corn subsidies. It was in the newspaper this week about how the huge corn subsidies coming into Dane County. Thanks.
Thanks, Ron, for the call. Professor Caswell.
Well, I think that all of these parts are parts of the whole system. When we go back to food safety for meat and poultry products, then that starts on the farm, and it starts in the chicken houses where the broilers are being raised. And so having the veterinary infrastructure to support food production is essential and is something that will need to be addressed as part of this process. I believe Tommy Thompson belongs to now a group that's called, I think it's the Coalition for a Stronger FDA.
Oh, really?
And is one of the people who is making the argument that FDA needs to be strengthened.
Mm-hmm. More phone calls in a moment. Professor Julie Caswell is our guest, and we are talking about the safety of the food supply. We're talking about the president's announcement on Wednesday of this week that there will be a panel of cabinet officials looking at ways to minimize the dangers from food and also other products that are coming into the United States. It is the Interagency Working Group on Import Safety, and the president will try to identify actions that could be taken within, and our guest is concerned about this phrase, within existing resources. The question, of course, is don't we need more resources to improve import safety, and is it enough? So we are welcoming more phone calls. One line is open, 800-486-8655, 227-2050 if you're joining us in Milwaukee. We should also say that Professor Caswell has Wisconsin ties, receiving her Ph.D. at the University of Wisconsin back in the middle 80s. Her work focuses on understanding the operation of domestic and international food systems, analyzing how well they work, evaluating how government policy affects their operation, and also their performance. And we'll take more calls in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Professor Julie Caswell, Professor Chair of the Department of Resource Economics at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, is our guest. Second hour of our program today, 40 years ago, this summer was the Summer of Love in San Francisco. And we'll be talking about what it means to be a hippie, whether or not there truly was a renaissance in music and poetry at that time. What about the drug scene that summer and those years? What about political statements that were being made? Were there many political statements being made? And we'll look at the incredible flourishing of music. The Rolling Stone magazine put together a list in this current issue of the 40 not-to-be-missed albums that came from that one year, and you'd be amazed how many albums that we play still today came from 1967. All right, let's go back to phone calls now. And here we go. Paul is next from Escanaba. Hi, Paul.
Hello, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
Kathleen, I get a little upset occasionally because I've been listening for your show to start, and then all of a sudden Sister Bass switches over to classical music, and I have to go online to get you. But
oh.
Listen to you all the time. Question for Dr. Caswell would be, could she comment on the difference in funding and support between the Clinton administration and this second Bush administration?
Yes. Hi, Paul. The change that has happened in the Bush administrations is that the funding has remained flat, essentially, and so it's not keeping up with inflation. And it is falling behind relative to funding for other public health type of enterprises like the Centers for Disease Control or the National Institute of Health. So it's both an issue of the funding not increasing, but it's also an issue of the job that the FDA has to do has been getting more complex with the increase in imports that we're having. And so it kind of it's a combination of flat budgets and a bigger job to do.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for your call. Peter from Madison. Hi.
Hi there. You just caught me off guard. A couple of points. I've worn a couple of hats at least during my lifetime, and one of them, I mapped soils for Purdue University along with the USDA. And then after one of my graduate degrees, I was in charge of all the hydrogeologists for the state of Indiana's hazardous waste program. And one of the disingenuous things that was talked about by your guest, or maybe just, you know, not fully thinking through the comment, is that this country of origin concept, she said that it is not really a product safety issue because she said many of these countries can be. That's a very important qualifier. Can be as safe as the United States. And even the United States, if we remember the underlying premise of Fast Food Nation and Fatland, is that our Department of Agriculture, under Earl Butts, made the point of trying to get corn into virtually everything. And so we started seeing it creeping into the food system. such that there's a recent book, I believe it's called Department of Corn, rather than the Department of Agriculture, that really points to the government working with agribusiness to promote things that are not in the public's best interest. And we also know that hormone levels in red meat are so high that people who have a consistent diet of red meat, now this is from the United States of America, will have 20% lower fertility rates in terms of the males because of the force feeding of hormones, growth hormones, and antibiotics that are jammed into chickens. This is an issue that has been discussed in other Wisconsin Public Radio talking points, but it has also been, you know, brought up, you know, through other forums, but it's not really discussed, is that, you know, food safety isn't just about the acute issues. It's about the chronic problems that develop in terms of obesity, in terms of fertility rates, in terms of cancers. And then lastly, it's the idea of growing products in Brazil and other countries south of the equator is absolutely insane for the sustainability of the planet because they're knocking down rainforest for companies like Archer Daniels Midland and Cargill to go in there and essentially use these oxisols, which are very oxidized soils, for a short period of time. Then they're useless. They turn into arid land. Then they go in further and knock down more rainforest. So it is very important for the planet to know where your food is coming from the sustainability of the land and what it should be used for, rather than just the short-term benefit of some agribusiness company.
Professor Caswell.
Yeah, I think that you raised several issues and several different quality issues related to food. And in addition to microbial safety, it can be, you know, chemical safety, it can be animal drug safety, it could be sustainability and the sort of the energy imprint of the food products that we're buying. And so all of those are important to people and in varying degrees, but they're all things that we can care about. We may regulate if we choose, or we may leave to voluntary movements like fair trade movements and other movements like that to communicate to us about what that quality of particular products. But my main point on the country of origin labeling is that it tells you things. It tells you, I can know that my grapes are coming from Chile. And I can, if I am worried about the long-distance transport of food products, then I wouldn't choose that particular product. What I was arguing was that I cannot make a one-to-one relationship between the country it's coming from and the safety level, because the safety level depends on the supply chain, how that product was produced and how it was handled. And I cannot, you know, make a blanket view of a product from a particular country based on what that country is. But I can know whether it had to get on a plane to get here from a country of origin label. Mm-hmm. So it can tell me different things.
Thank you, Peter, unless you had something else.
Well, you know, I think it is very important to recognize the disconnect that was well-documented with Pew Global, where they did an evaluation of countries around the world and the relationship between what the government is doing and who it's acting on behalf of. And the United States came in the bottom of the barrel in terms of the big industrialized countries, in terms of the government actually working in on behalf of the people. And the Nordic countries like the Netherlands, Sweden, and Norway, and Iceland were at the top. And it really relates to the vested interest in keeping information away from people. And all I ask people to do is look at people's waistlines. Look at all the USGS studies that show there's virtually not a county in the United States where there isn't herbicide and pesticide contamination of groundwater, where there's agribusiness. And that these concentrations just cannot be looked at in the same way that we didn't pay attention to 9/11. You have to connect the dots and see that eventually this island that we live on Earth, it's very important not just to look at one specific issue, but to look at all the dots connected together. And if you don't, you're fooling yourself.
Thank you, Peter. Let's go to Joy next from Fountain City. Hi, Joy.
Hi. I want to start off by saying I just totally agree with everything the gentleman ahead of me just said. I kind of wanted to zoom in a little closer on food irradiation. I know it's been legalized and it's seen as acceptable by the United States government, but I think everybody ought to take a look at the Mercola.com website on the Internet, and he has taken a real strong stand.
Who is this? I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
It's www.mercola.com.
How do you spell that?
M-E-R-C-O-L-A.
Okay.
Headed by Dr. Joseph Mercola, who's actually a rather controversial figure. He does a lot of his research and relies on research funded by independent research groups, not funded by big business.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a list on his site of the 10 top reasons for opposing food irradiation. Some of the research dates back to the 1950s that revealed problems in animals that ate irradiated food, like premature deaths, rare forms of cancer, reproductive dysfunction, chromosomal abnormalities, and the list goes on. There are 10 important things. Many of them are from research that's a lot more current. There's also a little magazine that's maybe a little bit regional called Natural Communities that has some excellent articles in it called Dear God, Don't Eat That,
mm-hmm.
that concerns a lot of the food that is out in our market today that's legal and seen as safe for the public to eat.
All right. Professor Caswell, are you familiar with this?
I'm not familiar with that website, but what I would say is that the federal government is providing safety levels based on its scientific evaluation, and I think it's a free market, and each of us can make our own decisions on which kind of products we want to make part of our diets.
Mm-hmm. As long as we have all the information, part of the issue here is that we don't have all the information we need, right?
Right, and irradiation, at least at this point in time, is labeled on food products,
mm-hmm.
So that's one that people can get information on.
Right. Thanks for the call. We need to move to a couple more before we say goodbye to everybody. Mary Ann from Brookfield. Hi.
Good morning. The one thing that's never brought up that just astounds me is that people aren't happy with all of these items with their food supply and the problems, and the solution is right in their hands. Don't purchase it. Do not buy the meat and dairy products for a while. And you can bet that if the demand for the products goes down, they're going to take a hard look at it and think, well, what can we do now to sell it? I mean, it's not like it's going to kill you to buy organic fruits and vegetables and eat rice and beans for a while. I mean, I don't understand it. But you have the power in your hands. You just don't purchase this stuff. I mean, you're purchasing irradiated food that's, irradiated because it's full of feces and stuff, and people are eating this? I mean, it's beyond comprehension why people are purchasing this stuff.
Professor Caswell.
I think that was the point I was making is that we all have choices in the food that we buy, and we have lots of different outlets to buy food, and we can make our own evaluations about what we want to buy and to not buy. The function of the government is to make sure that all the food products that are available to us are safe, and that's the job of FDA and USDA.
And what will you suggest consumers do if they really want to get behind these new testing methodologies, want more meat in the FDA? What should they do?
I guess for the FDA question, to talk with their elected representatives about the funding for the FDA,
mm-hmm.
and probably the Internet is our best search mechanism to look at new technologies. I would just encourage everybody to read very broadly and hear all the evidence on these different issues.
Mm-hmm. One more phone call, less than a minute. We go to Bob. Hi, Bob.
Hello.
Hi, Bob. We need to make it quick.
Oh, when things say that they're sugar-free, I was just wondering what artificial sweeteners and to what degree that they're added to the foodstuffs.
Well, you should be able to know if there's any artificial sweeteners from the ingredients list. So that's where you would get that information.
Professor Caswell, thanks so much for being with us.
You're welcome.
Our guest, Professor Julie Caswell, and Professor Caswell is in the, well, she's a professor and chair of the Department of Resource Economics at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, where her work is on the operation of domestic and international food systems. How well do they work? What about government policy affecting their operation and performance, with a special concentration in the economics of food quality, particularly attributes of safety and nutrition? How are markets for food safety and nutrition developing given increased consumer demand for safer, more nutritious products, manufacturers' and retail's efforts to meet the demand, and increased regulatory activity by the national government to assure food quality? Our conversation prompted by the president's announcement earlier this week of the creation of a panel of cabinet officials who are looking for ways to minimize the dangers from food and other products shipped into this country. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, to Jerome Owens for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee, and thanks everybody for all of your calls. News is coming up, and we'll have more Friday conversation here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.